Poems can be many things to many people. Solace, a call to action, beauty, a homework assignment. But for poet Ray Armantrout, they should all be at least one thing, read out loud. Armantrout recently won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for her book, Versed. The producer of the show, Charles Monroe Kane, was so knocked out by the book he just had to talk to her, to hear her read her poetry out loud.
Simple. Complex systems can arise from simple rules. It's not that we want to survive. It's that we've been drugged and made to act as if we do. While all the while the sea breaks and rolls painlessly under, if we're not copying it, we're lonely. Is this the knowledge that demands to be passed down? Time is made from swatches of heaven and hell. If we're not killing it, we're hungry.
Wow, I don't know how many times I've quoted, if we're not killing it, we're hungry. It was my Facebook status update recently.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It seems a little cynical, though, to me. When I hear the poem again, it seems cynical, but I kind of shake my head at the truth of it. It kind of reminds me of Charles Bukowski, one of my favorite poets. He has the great lines, you know, I wish to weep, but sorrow is stupid. I wish to believe, but belief is a graveyard. You know, he wishes, but he knows. And I'm wondering if you feel that's where you are now, that you wish, but you know.
Well, when I wrote Simple, I thought I was probably dying. And that was quite a while ago, and I haven't died yet. But anyway, from that point of view, when you're thinking that you're dying, life can look like a cruel trick. Do I feel that way now? Well, not exactly. But, I mean, I think life doesn't let you feel that way for long, right?
Right.
Because life is beautiful and desirable and also manipulative and exploitative. So, anyway, I don't think the poem is cynical exactly, because a cynic, in my understanding of the term, a cynic feels above it all and is kind of looking down on something and feeling superior. And I felt very vulnerable at the time of writing it. But of course, you know, I'm still dying. I mean, we're all dying, so.
but dying, to tell our listeners what's happening there, you had cancer.
Yeah.
And a lot of the poems in this book, Versed, grapple with that. How did that affect you as a poet? I mean, you're writing about the world around you, and suddenly the world around you is caving in on you. How did that affect your writing?
Well, it was sort of oddly provocative because it put me in a very strange place. Things seemed kind of surreal for a while. And whenever something is strange, it makes me want to, as a writer, go towards it and explore it. So I did that. And also, I think probably I thought that as long as I was writing, I wasn't actually dying. As long as I could keep talking, you know, that Scheherazade syndrome. So
sure.
So there was that. And then, of course, I investigated cancer a little bit. Not a lot, but I read a little bit about it. And it's interesting. So some of the medical terminology and the language about cancer came in, because I always tend to pick up whatever language is around me and kind of absorb it.
You're a writer, and for anyone who's an artist, one of the goals, I would assume, is to leave that mark, right? The thing that lasts beyond your life. You have a great line from one of your poems. I really love it. It says, any statement I issue, if particular enough, will prove I was here. Can words really do that? Is that what you were trying to do?
Well, in so many of my poems, I think the real answer is yes and no, or kind of probably not, but we can get closer and closer to it. And I think there's a kind of pathos in the attempt. I was trying to explore, what do we really want from description? Do we want to say something that other people are going to recognize, or do we want to say something unique? Probably can't have it both ways.
One thing you do, we're talking about some of these bigger questions, is you really get to the mundane. You'd quote bumper stickers and, and things. I would love if you could read your poem Presto for us as a really
sure.
good example of how you're looking at the modern world.
Okay. Presto. Breaking Anna Nicole news as she buries her son. What do you want to be? Skeleton suits and Superman outfits. Inappropriate touching on drugstore racks. Presto, pairs of flies retie the old knot midair. Blonde wigs and wizard caps. I want to go back. Invisible knot. I want to be that.
When I think about Anna Nicole Smith, that's certainly not someone, you know, I think of in a context of poetry. But when you pull that out of context and put it in poetry, it really gives it some power. You have this great line in one of your other poems that goes, "These temporary credits will no longer be reflected in your next billing period." That sounds like it's just lifted from your telephone bill.
That is exactly right. That's my telephone bill.
That's from your telephone bill?
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. How do you do that? You're a poet. You sit around, you must have a notebook, and you see a bumper sticker, you read your telephone bill, and you say, boom. You write it down in your notebook and put it all together. How does that process go, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of your magic with us?
Well, that's pretty much it. I do keep a blank book journal, and I do make notes. I mean, I guess I was already working on the poem when I got the phone bill. So when I read the phone bill and I came to those rather strange and slightly sinister words.
Yeah, they're kind of ominous.
Yeah, I know. It just seemed to fit the mood of the poem I was working on, so I just put it right in there.
I was wondering if you could read another poem for us. It's on page 11. It's the poem Outer.
Okay. Outer. Dolls as celebrities, Barbie. Celebrities as dolls. I'm the one who can't know if the scraggly old woman putting a gallon of vodka in her shopping cart feels guilty, defiant, or even glamorous as she does so. She may imagine herself as an actress playing an alcoholic in a film. Removal activates glamour? To see yourself as if from the outside, though not as others see you. Carried by light, images remain, while sensation is so evanescent as to be always beyond belief. The outer world means State Farm, donuts, taekwondo, thoughts as spent fuel rods, preceded and followed by statuesque shadows of cacti on a lawn. Today could be described as a retired man humming tunelessly to himself. When I ask what you're thinking, you say, about explaining to children the best way to build a maypole.
Wow, that is a powerful poem. You seemed that you have a faith in words. I'm wondering how you would feel if your human body still existed, but you wake up tomorrow and your faith in words is gone. Where would you be without a faith in those words?
I'm not sure that I do have a real faith that words are describing the world. I mean, the actual world, the real, you know. I think that if we're lucky, words are describing human perceptions and what's accessible through human perception and human culture. But that's not the same thing as getting to the real. I think we're just making sort of stabs in the dark, and we don't know really what we're hitting. I think the only way that we get the sense that something's real is when it surprises us. So then we're outside our own heads for a minute.
I will look for surprises.
Mm.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to leave us with one more poem?
Sure. Did you have one in mind?
No, whatever you feel led to after all that discussion.
Okay, well, here's one that's always a kind of good for a goodbye. Anchor. Widely expected, if you will, cataclysm. Things I'd say, am saying, to persons no longer present. Yards away, trim junipers make their customary bows. Oh, no thank you to any of it. If you watch me from increasing distance, I am writing this always.
Ray Armantrout, reading from her Pulitzer Prize-winning book of poetry, Versed. TT Book producer Charles Monroe Kane spoke with her.